Kildare Focus with Kira Noble.
Good afternoon. It is the 1st of December and you're very welcome in to Wednesday's edition of Kildare Focus with me, Kira Noble. Joining me in the next couple of minutes is the Chief Executive of the Restaurants Association of Ireland. He's going to be speaking about the Employment Wage Subsidy Scheme. Dara Cassidy is the Head of Communications with Bonkers.ie on SSE Airtricity and Pinergy both raising their prices from today. I think in terms of SSE Airtricity, I think it's the third price rise in the past 12 months. The Chief Executive of Bernardo's joins us. Concerned they are, Bernardo's, about the call for mandatory face mask wearing for children aged 9 or from third class upwards in schools. That's come into place since today. Stephen O'Hare is also the Chief Executive of HIV Ireland. It's World AIDS Day today. He's going to be discussing the signs, the symptoms and support that's available for people. And Dr. Nilu Ahmed is a lecturer in social sciences at the University of Bristol on why celebrating Christmas is good for your mental health. I think we can say it now that it's the 1st of December and KFM has begun playing Christmas music, of course. What is your favourite Christmas song? I have so many. Anyway, get in touch with me this afternoon. The text lines and the WhatsApp lines are in association with Whitewater Shopping Centre in Newbridge. And that number is 0833 97 97 97. You can call in to Cuiva, who's going to be in Studio 2. That's 045 901 490. And of course, you can email me. It's studio@kfmradio.com. Now, as I mentioned a moment ago, I am joined by the Chief Executive of the Restaurants Association of Ireland, Adrian Cummins. Hi, Adrian.
Good afternoon.
You're here this afternoon to discuss the decision to proceed with the cuts to the Employment Wage Subsidy Scheme from Wednesday. You've blasted it as a monumental blow. We know currently that there are restrictions in place for more nighttime nightlife sector. 12 a.m. in the morning is when everywhere has to be closed, including places like restaurants who may open a little later sometimes when it comes to the weekend. So I can only imagine that this is just another blow after the past couple of weeks.
This is a massive blow to the restaurant industry and the hospitality industry at large. Hotels, pubs, restaurants are being hit with a 42% cut in the wage supplement scheme, the EWSS, from this today. We've said to government very clearly that, you know, while government messaging is don't socialise in the lead up to Christmas, that's effectively a closure order on our industry. So that support around the EWS must be maintained. We're hoping that the government will restore that full payment. Obviously, there's a lot of activity from lobbying government officials, TDs, over the last number of days, and hopefully they'll change that in due course. But it's a devastating blow for our industry at a time where you have thousands and thousands of cancellations across our industry for Christmas parties in light of public health advice.
Adrian, would you have a percentage of the number of members that are currently using the EWSS with the Restaurants Association of Ireland?
We would say between 90-95% of businesses in hospitality are using the EWS scheme. It's hugely important for those businesses to keep their businesses afloat, keep them sustainable, keep people in employment. So what will happen here is businesses will make a decision to say it's not viable to stay open. Why would I open when effectively we're under effectively huge restrictions? And then they lay off the staff onto the dole queues. That's a no-win situation for the state or for these businesses, which put them into a very precarious position.
Just to let listeners know, so under the enhanced terms, an employer availing of the EWSS for an employee on a weekly wage of €350, the subsidy has increased from €203 to €300 per week.
Has decreased.
I meant to say decreased. And then similarly, for an employee on a weekly wage of €475, the subsidy has decreased from €203 a week to €350 a week. Just how many businesses within, again, the association are at risk of being gone by the time 2022 turns around?
Well, we're trying to analyse that now at the moment. And as you can see from social media at the moment, you can see empty restaurants on social media across Ireland. It's a demoralising state of affairs where the government are saying your business is open. Messaging is don't socialise. And then the cut or the EWS scheme by 42% today. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever to enact this new policy. What they should have done is they should have waited until after Christmas in the new year when we get a hold and a handle on and get businesses back to a viable state of opening. And we will always, and have done so for nearly 20 months, protect public health and do everything that we're told to do as an industry and a sector. But we've been economically flattened from March of 2020 right through to now. And we're facing into a very bleak Christmas, for many families that are dependent on hospitality for their livelihoods. And we're saying to the government very clearly here is you need to listen to the business owners that are in the front line of dealing with the economic crisis that affects our industry. And now is not the time to change the EWS scheme. Now is the time to sit down with us and devise what way we're going to keep these businesses viable. Because having a 43% cut in the subsidy is not the right thing to do at this current moment in time.
Adrian, what would you say to the people out there who may say that, you know, the hospitality sector have followed all the guidelines and everything that's been put in place by the government and are obviously glad that that's been done, but they themselves are still just worried about the current situation to do with COVID-19 and whether there was restrictions in place with the 12 o'clock cut-off point for these businesses to stay open. They themselves might be putting their bums in the seats in restaurants, especially in colder winter months when we know ventilation is key with this virus, and this virus is airborne. And unfortunately, that is a fact we all have to swallow.
Yes, and at no stage have we asked for businesses to be opened fully under, you know, we've always said we will maintain and abide by public health advice. We've done that right through the pandemic. We've implemented the COVID pass. Our association was the first to come out and back it under huge criticism from certain quarters that we were doing the wrong thing. It is the right thing to do. It protects public health. But now the messaging around government is don't socialise, even if you are vaccinated. So we're being hit every way. But the government and TDs, government ministers, are saying, well, your businesses are open, and then cut us by 43% in the EWS scheme. Well, now is the time. You shouldn't do that. I'm speaking to my colleagues across Europe today, to the governments where they are under extreme pressure from COVID. What have they done? They've reversed all of their government supports back to full supports right through these difficult times. So they're doing the opposite of what the Irish government is doing. What they're doing is reinstating supports to the full 100%, not like the Irish government, which is reducing by 43% as of today.
Okay, well, Adrian Cummins, the Chief Executive of the Restaurants Association of Ireland, thank you for joining me. We have heard that certain energy companies are increasing their prices from today. Joining me now is Bonkers.ie Director of Communications, Dara Cassidy. How are you?
Hi, Ciara. I'm good, thanks.
So it's not great news for a lot of people who are either customers with, across the board, we know electricity prices are rising. But in particular today, we're speaking about Pinergy and SSE electricity customers. What are they facing?
Yeah, so they're facing some pretty big price hikes that come into effect from today. But you're right, all the suppliers have been increasing prices over the past year. In fact, there's been 35 or more price hike announcements in 2021 alone. So no one has, you know, gotten out of it unscathed, unfortunately. But Pinergy customers are looking at a 19% increase in the price of their electricity from today, which is pretty significant.
Dara, that's absolutely massive. Like,
it is.
Has there ever been a hike of that height before?
Believe it or not, this year there's been plenty that have actually come close. It's just been one of those years. 2021 has been, I think it wouldn't be an overstatement to say that is, you know, it was a crisis year for the energy industry, and we've seen increases of that size, you know, almost across the board. But that's going to add, Ciara, around €300 a year to the average customer's electricity bill. So it's pretty hefty. And then if you look at SSE, they're hitting their customers with just over a 9% price hike to their gas and electricity. So it's pretty significant. And if you look actually at all of the price increases this year from those two suppliers, Pinergy customers will be looking at paying around maybe €800 more for the electricity, and SSE customers will be looking at paying maybe €300 more for their electricity and €200 more for the gas. So it's really significant.
So Dara, I know we're always told to shop around, but is there much of a point at the moment? Are all the electricity providers offering the same sort of rate? I know depending on what they were offering previously, their hikes, would say today for example, are going to be at different levels. But in general, if you're going out there to look around, is there much of a savings you could possibly make?
There still is. It's a good question. So we're constantly getting asked at Bonkers.ie whether it's pays to say to switch anymore and whether people should bother. But you need to remember that the way the energy industry works, it's a little bit like sometimes the broadband and the TV industry. So, you know, if you maybe switch your broadband or TV, you might get half price broadband for maybe 6 months or a year. The energy market isn't that different. If you switch, you'll get a discount from most of the main suppliers for switching. They offer these great discounts of maybe 30 to 40% to entice people to switch, and they're still doing that. So even though prices are going up, you can absolutely spend less than you otherwise would by switching. And at the moment, the average customer who switches will save around €600 a year or so on their gas and electricity. But Kira, if someone were to switch from one of the dearest suppliers at the moment to one of the cheapest, and they were switching their gas and their electricity, they could actually save over €1,500. So it's a huge sum of money. So I can't overemphasize enough to listeners that it absolutely still does pay to switch. And, you know, if there's one year or one winter when you don't want to be overpaying for your energy, this is it. Because also, you know, with COVID, a lot of us are still going to be spending a little bit more time at home, working from home. So energy usage is going to be higher than it normally would be. And then you have gas and electricity prices that are at record levels. So it's just a recipe for disaster in some ways. So, you know, absolutely switch is the key message people need to hear.
What's the advice to get those 30 to 40% discounts? Because I think it depends probably on the customer who's trying to get the 30 or 40% out of the company, because not everybody can do so. Have you got advice? Are there tips or things we can say?
No, listen, if you switch, like this is, sometimes people haggle, you know, they haggle with their existing supplier. They might knock something off their unit rate. But honestly, if you go on to a comparison and switching site, so there's several out there, obviously we're one, bonkers.ie. If you go on to a site like ours, put in some usage details and you'll see a list of all the plans that are there and all the new offers. And like I said, you know, the market is still quite competitive. So there's 14 energy suppliers, believe it or not, in the Irish energy market. So it's a huge number for a country as small as ours. There's only around 2.2 million households or 2.2 million homes. So, you know, it's a small market. So to have 14 suppliers, it's a lot, but they all compete really, really aggressively for new business, Kira. Like I said, they're always offering discounts of 20, 30, sometimes 40%. And it's really as simple as just going on, seeing what's out there on a price comparison site, and then doing the switch. It's really quick and easy, and it's honestly one of the simplest bills you can switch. You know, if you were talking to me about switching, I don't know, a mortgage, Kira, or maybe, you know, your broadband, sometimes it's a little bit more complicated. Obviously, with the mortgage, you know, you'd need to get your solicitor involved. But when it comes to gas and electricity, you go on, you just need a few items to hand and it takes a few minutes, and then, you know, you could have savings of anywhere from €600 to over €1,500.
Yeah, no, it's actually a huge amount of providers in this country, 14, as Dara said. And that is the head of communications for bonkers.ie, Dara Cassidy, and thank you for joining us this afternoon. Just to reiterate it, SSE Airtricity, they will increase both gas and electricity charges by 9.4% and the gas by 9.8%. That increase comes at an additional €115 per year on electricity and 86 on gas bills. That's on average. And then in terms of SSE Airtricity customers, as I just mentioned, sorry, Pinergy customers, I should say, the bills could increase by 19% and that could add on an extra €300 or more. So the advice is to switch, look around, shop around, and as Dara said, some of the savings can be up to 30 to 40%, which are absolutely massive. Some people saving up to €1,500.
Kildare Focus with Kira Noble.
Now, if you were tuned into our news earlier on this afternoon and this morning, we know that pupils from third class upwards who do not comply with face mask mandate as of today, which is that they will have to be wearing a face covering in the classroom, they'll be asked to stand down from school. That's in quotes from the Education Minister, Norma Foley. There has been a lot of conversation about it today, but Barnardo's have responded to the mask wearing for children aged 9 and upwards. And joining me now is the Chief Executive of Barnardo's, Suzanne Connolly. Hi, Suzanne.
Hello.
Thank you very much for taking the time. How does yourself and Barnardo's feel about the new mask mandate for those aged over 9 or in third class and above?
Well, we're really concerned that the government has made it mandatory for children to wear a mask at school, and particularly that the statement there that if children don't wear a mask, they can be excluded from school. And we think that's just not acceptable. I mean, the government has, by and large, done a very good job at explaining to us why certain public health measures need to be followed, And parents and children have complied very well. So we don't understand why this couldn't have been something that was advised and explained to parents, and indeed then for parents to explain to their children as to why it was necessary, and then introduced gradually.
So what do you mean you don't understand why it wouldn't be advised rather than mandatory?
Well, because you see, if you advise it, you first of all, you allow for the fact that, as the government themselves allowed for the fact that some children, for health reasons, may not be able to wear a mask. So you allow for that very quickly. You also give time for parents to consider their own views and to explain it to their children. And then people feel that they do have a degree of choice and that they're not being dictated to, which I think is really important that the government continues what it's done very well to date, which is bring people with them when it's talking about restricting things that we would like to do. Because the other thing we think is important is that the government understands and explains the impact that this will have on particularly younger children, the 8 and 9 year olds. You know, they're still very much learning social skills, and to wear a mask is going to really impede it'll impede to a certain extent their ability to communicate, but absolutely their ability then to read other people and to relate. So in and of itself, a mask does limit their social and emotional development.
And I guess playing devil's advocate to a point, we know that a huge majority of the cases that have been confirmed over the past month and a half in particular have been of those aged in the primary school age group. So I would say 5 to 12, 5 to 11. Now, we know currently there are no vaccinations for kids in that age group. So it would seem that the vaccines are working, obviously, which is great news for those who do make the choice, as you said, everything's about choice, to get vaccinated themselves. But this is the Christmas season. We know we had last year a lot of families missing each other because they decided to keep each other safe, etc. And obviously the need for children to wear these masks is to hopefully, I would assume that the government and NPHET are saying this, hopefully to curb the spread of COVID-19. Do you not think at the age of 9, after, would say, walking around in the world of a pandemic, would say since the age of 7 or 8, that children would be able to understand why they may be being asked?
I think, well, you see, the thing is they haven't had to do it to date. So if you think about it, those children in that age group. So I think there should
Sorry,
be a
Sorry, I mean in
friendly.
The sense that they can see everybody else aside from their age group walking around each day in the shops, etc., on an airplane.
Oh, yeah, no, to be honest, the shops, absolutely. You know, I mean, I think that's exactly the point that you've made. You know, they see other children doing it, you know, not less, probably older than them, their parents do. I think that's... The shops I wouldn't have any concern about at all, really, because I think it's fairly easy to explain and it's for a short period of time when they're in the shop, you know.
But wouldn't it make more sense, Suzanne, because it's for a short period in the shop, that for a longer period when you have more time potentially exposed to a virus, to wear the face coverings during the longer period over the shorter period, if you were to decide between the two? I'm not saying obviously not to wear one in a shop or any other criteria.
Yeah, I see your point, but I suppose what we're saying in Bernardo's is that why couldn't the government, first of all, have made it advisory? Because if you think about it, most of us, most children and parents, people are being very compliant anyway. So they didn't have to say, they didn't have to put that really concerning aspect to it, that children would be excluded from school. And the other thing is, the thing is, we realise in Bernardo's, for some children to turn up to school is a great achievement, because things are tough at home and that there might be a degree of chaos, you know. So for them then to possibly then be told, no, you can't come to school, could be really detrimental to them. Because the other thing what's being required of parents, if you see the government guidelines, a lot of organisation as well, to have both masks for children and then clean masks, and then, you know, there's a lot to it. So we think there would have been a lot of space for the government to say, this is what we think is really important, this is why it's important, we're strongly advising this, this is how we'll support you to explain it to your children, and this is how we support schools to manage if parents are refusing to send their children to school because they don't want the children to wear a mask.
Now, I obviously assume you haven't been on Bernardo's helpline today, but by and large, what are the sort of calls and comments and complaints maybe that are coming in to Bernardo's today and over the past couple of days?
Yeah, I think what we're hearing really is, and the concern is the mandatory aspect of it, and particularly that issue of saying, you know, the child will be excluded from school, and there's questions about whether that's even a legal right for the government to do that. You know, whether or not just infringing on children's rights So whether they actually can say that is the first thing. And also, I think what people are saying is, why couldn't there have been given more time to plan this through, you know, to think about how we can support schools, how we can support parents, and how we can explain it to children. Because as others have talked about, we don't want children scared, too scared. We want them to understand this is for their protection, but also that there is a plan, that it won't necessarily be long term, because that's the other thing the government said, that they're going to review it in February. And we need to know the criteria by which we'll then make a decision whether or not it needs to continue.
Okay. It's very interesting, as you're saying, there's so many layers to it. You're mentioning the legal aspect of it.
Yeah.
Does the government have a right to be making sure that these children are wearing masks, and if not, to be sending them home? We know a lot of children spent a huge amount of time outside of schools last year. We know some kids went hungry because the school place was the only place that they would get, would say, nutritious and enough food. And then when it comes to some people's homes, they're scary places and scary environments. But we are in a pandemic, and I think the huge majority can see why government and NPHET maybe have decided on this advice, but the questions are still there. And look, we greatly appreciate you coming on to chat with me this afternoon, Suzanne Connolly, the Chief Executive of Barnardo's. Take care and good afternoon to you. Let me know what you think about it all. Do you think it's a good idea? Do you think, I mean, Suzanne brings up some good points, and a lot of people have said the same sort of thing. And we've got Marion just on here now saying, Barnardo's is correct. The government started enforcing masks upon adults claiming exceptions to the rule, but now there is pure discrimination. These grounds for exemptions for certain children will soon fade away. Children with autism and developmental disabilities, let alone medical conditions, and their need will be forgotten about. Marion Salins. Well, God, Marion, I hope that's not the case. I know there are a lot of people out there who are in very difficult circumstances at the moment, and it is something else. It's a big thing to, you know, for parents to take on board, and even the simple things like making sure they have the mask, making sure it's clean, making sure they're wearing it the right way. There's a lot to go through it. So do get in touch. As I was telling you, the text line is 0833 97 97 97, but so much heavy stuff. Now, moving on to something very different. Stephen O'Hare is the Chief Executive of HIV Ireland. Today is World AIDS Day, I should say. And believe it or not, it's nearly been 40 years since the first AIDS case was diagnosed in Ireland. That was 1982. Stephen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Ciara.
It's pretty crazy to think that 40 years. I myself wasn't alive at the time, and I have seen, I wouldn't really know much about living through those times for obvious reasons because I wasn't there. But movies like Philadelphia and stuff really opened my eyes to what the situation was like and how scary it was, and seeing people who have been interviewed over the years. And it was basically a death sentence at the time, wasn't it?
It was very, very severe. And when people were diagnosed in the 1980s, there was little that could be done in terms of treating HIV and preventing somebody from developing an AIDS-related illness. And so it wasn't until people actually began to die from AIDS-related illnesses that HIV was even uncovered. And so it was a very difficult time for people.
Stephen, I think still to this day, people don't fully understand the difference between HIV and AIDS. So I guess just describe for a couple of minutes just exactly the virus itself.
Well, HIV, the human immunodeficiency virus, is the virus that causes AIDS. And when we talk about AIDS, we're talking about somebody having acquired immunodeficiency syndrome, which is the AIDS, that's what it stands for. And that's a scenario where a person's immune system reaches a level where they cannot fight off ordinary infections and ordinary diseases, and people can develop AIDS-related illnesses. So a person doesn't necessarily die from AIDS. They die from an AIDS-related illness. And just in the example I gave, the first people to be recorded as dying from AIDS-related illnesses actually had a form of cancer. But there are other things that that the immune system wouldn't be able to combat. Pneumonia was often a common one that people would contract if they had developed full-blown AIDS. That would then be an AIDS-related illness. But the virus HIV, that is like the SARS-CoV-2 virus, if I was to describe it as a virus.
Yeah.
So SARS-CoV-2 causes COVID-19, causes you know, the illness that you get and the symptoms that you get. So HIV in your system can lead to developing an AIDS-related illness.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, things have changed a great deal in that time.
I mean, basically a 180, Stephen. It's incredible what has been done within those, you know, 38, 39 years. There's so many other diseases and viruses out there that we do not have the treatment like we do for HIV and AIDS. And there's so many people who are living HIV positive, may not necessarily that they have full-blown or AIDS or have an AIDS-related disease, but they're living very long lives with being HIV positive.
Well, that's it. So somebody living with HIV who is on an effective treatment, and we call that treatment antiretroviral treatment, somebody who, and that's free in Ireland, and it's available in Ireland, and we're very lucky to be able to get access to ART when needed. So somebody who is on ART will have the virus. The virus will be suppressed in their system. It will be diminished. It will be suppressed to such a point where it will be undetectable in their system. And what that means is that there's not enough of the virus in a person's system to be detected. And that means, and it's been proven scientifically, that they cannot then pass on the virus through sex or other means to somebody else. So that is an extraordinary development. Now, it's worth saying that the technology and the medical advances that have allowed us to get to this point where we can, if somebody's living with HIV, they have a full life expectancy, they can have, you know, a life unperturbed basically from HIV and any medical complications, health complications, that is not available as freely everywhere in the world as it should be. And so we do still see AIDS-related deaths around the world, particularly in places where there is limited access to effective treatment. And that's a problem. In this day and age, and we know this now from thinking about COVID and talking about COVID. And
vaccine inequity.
Exactly. It shouldn't be happening. And the world over, we have now committed to ending new HIV transmissions by 2030. And that's a very ambitious approach. But with the technology we have, with the medication we have, it can be done.
Stephen, I guess a lot of things nowadays when people discuss them, it does tie back to COVID-19 to some extent. So a new report was released for today, World AIDS Day, by the European Centre for Disease Prevention and Control, the ECDC, and the World Health Organization, the Regional Office for Europe. And it showed that there's been a 24% decrease in the rate of newly diagnosed HIV cases between 2019 and 2020, which is obviously great news. But that may be due to reduced HIV testing. Obviously, that did happen. That's factual. There was less testing because of the services being disrupted due to the pandemic. Could it possibly mean that there are cases have possibly increased, or due to social distancing, etc.? Can we also assume that there probably has been a decrease because of that, not just because of the lack of testing?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say one may be impacting the other. There's no doubt. So we did see social venues closing. People couldn't go to the pub, they couldn't go out, they couldn't go to nightclubs, you know, they couldn't gather, they couldn't even go to the cinema for large parts of the last 18, 20 months. So what were the opportunities for people to come together, to engage in sexual activity in the ways that they may have done in the past? Probably they were more limited. And so in that respect, you would expect to see lower transmission rates of STIs. But I will caveat that by saying there is an outbreak of syphilis in Ireland at the moment, and we're actually seeing increases in rates of syphilis in transmission. So it doesn't necessarily follow. And then in Ireland, the statistics from Ireland really bear out the report from the ECDC today, suggesting that we've seen about a 17% decrease in the number of newly notified HIV cases in 2020. But we know that in 2020, there was a huge disruption to those testing services. And so we suspect that many cases were going undetected, and that's a problem. That will lead to increased rates of transmission. So we don't know what the future holds, but you would be holding your breath and perhaps thinking, you know, we could see an increase in transmission rates because of fewer detections. With HIV, you have to test for it. You have to detect this. And by getting somebody on effective treatment, you then stop that transmission. You stop that particular case of HIV from transmitting further. And that's what we need to be doing.
Stephen, if people want to get in touch with HIV Ireland, how do they do so?
Simple, simply, you can go onto our website, hivireland.ie, and you can find out all about us. You can find out all about HIV. You can find out all about prevention of HIV. It's all there. Our contact details are there. You can call our office. Our number is on the website. And if you're somebody who's living with HIV and is looking for support, well, we offer that support. And if you're looking for more information around prevention of HIV or where to get a test, or if you feel you might be symptomatic, you know, then you can call us and we'll put you in touch with the right people and ensure that you're getting access to the care that you need.
Yeah, and some more information, as Stephen just mentioned there, about the symptoms, etc., are on the website. Obviously, we don't have enough time to go through everything this afternoon. But Stephen O'Hare, the Chief Executive of HIV Ireland, thank you very much.
Kildare Focus with Ciara Noble.
Welcome back. I am joined by Dr. Neelu Ahmed. She's a lecturer in social sciences, I should say, at Bristol Dentist School at the University of Bristol. Good afternoon, Dr. Ahmed.
Good afternoon.
Thank you so much for joining. We were just speaking right before we came on air and I was complimenting you on your first name, Neelu. I absolutely love it. It's gorgeous. And you were talking about the Irish accents. They have a special place in your heart.
It's my favourite accent of all. I adore it. And by extension, I adore everyone who's Irish.
Oh, I love it. Okay, brilliant, brilliant. Well, I'll take that as a compliment. Thank you very much. Listen, I read an article of yours just over the past couple of days. After the past year and a half, nearly 2 years, believe it or not, we've had, you are saying that we need to celebrate Christmas because it's good for our mental health. Why is that?
Oh, more than ever. It's been such a difficult time for everyone, and particularly last year as well, when we had such uncertainty, and it's feeling like it's being repeated again this year of, can we see family members? Can we travel? How can we do this? And the instinct might be, you know what, I'm going to just hedge my bets and do nothing, because then I won't be let down. But it's more than ever, it's important to really try and celebrate, because we need these things. They make us feel better. And even if we're not spending time with everyone in the way that we like to, the fact that we are practicing the same rituals, we're getting the decorations out, we're having the same food, it taps into our memories of those times, and it will make us feel better.
Now, you make a good point in the article. You say that from the birthdays to the weddings and the graduations, obviously, those celebrations either haven't happened or have been postponed or have been subdued, as you mentioned, things like Halloween, Eid and Diwali. I know when it came to Halloween here in the country, there were some people who were very nervous to open their front doors when they probably wouldn't have been before, just because of the virus, not because of, you know, anybody who'd be on the other end. But you just reiterate, that's why it's so important this Christmas to celebrate it. Obviously, I don't think we're going to have a normal Christmas. Well, I can bet you 100% we're not going to have a normal Christmas. I know over here in Ireland, things are, you know, in a precarious situation at the moment. We have very high levels of COVID-19, the highest levels we've ever had throughout the pandemic. I know over in the UK, you guys were recording very high levels kind of throughout the year and a half compared to us here. So what is it like at the moment hearing about the Omicron variant and also Christmas coming up in the next 3-4 weeks?
It's incredibly uncertain, and people are not getting a consistent message. So we're having messages about, well, we'll review this in 2 weeks. And there's been a slight ramping up. So we're back to wearing face masks in public spaces. But then again, there's a dissonance there. So we're wearing them on public transport and in shops, but you don't have to wear them if you're in busy spaces like pubs and the hospitality areas. And so that's really quite confusing for people to know what, if this is as serious as it's being purported to be in the media and on the news, then surely we shouldn't be going into places that have limits, you know, really limited space for social distancing. So it's really confusing for everyone at this time, I think.
Now, obviously the word Christmas, it's Christ, you know, the first six letters of the word. It comes from, you know, Christian beliefs and views. But even if you're not religious, it is a great time of year to celebrate and to come together. You yourself personally, what did you miss the most in 2020 when it came to the Christmas period?
Oh, just seeing family. And it's such an important social event in everybody's calendar. You don't have to be religious to celebrate it, to have a tree, to exchange presents. People do Christmas at the levels that are right for them and that work for them. And so, you know, I know lots of people who are Christians and celebrate Christmas, but because of their working patterns, they're very much frontline workers, nurses who can't do Christmas all the time on Christmas Day. So it gets shifted around. And for other people as well, it's when you can see your family. And of course, because we have the bank holidays, it's a time when everyone has greater opportunities to be able to see their family. And that's what I missed most, being able to see all of my siblings and all their kids and get together with everyone.
Yeah, it is a lovely time to see kids especially, isn't it? They're all so excited. Neelu, just speak to us about the importance of ritual in people's lives.
It gives us a sense of routine. And routine is very important because it holds us almost together. When everything feels very frazzled and out of our control and I don't know what I'm doing, it's really nice to have a routine because that carries me through. I don't have to think about what I'm doing. So rituals are really important. They're very similar in this way. That whole process of making a Christmas dinner, of buying the things to support that, of buying presents or going out to see lights, it feels like it's a really important part of our identity, particularly in the dark winter months as well. They give us a sense of meaning. They give us a sense of, I know where I am here. This is a safe place for me. And that's so important at this time when there's so much uncertainty with COVID.
Now, one of the things that the festive period does bring about people is gratitude. And gratitude really does help anybody out in life. You become more positive and things kind of the ball starts rolling in the best way for you in your life when you do start to become more grateful and more positive. But when we look into the next few weeks, and as you're mentioning, the uncertainty, we can tend to, you know, lean to the negative side of thinking and the negative situations that are around us. So what advice do you have for people to keep them on that track, to stay as positive and grateful as possible, even though we're living in these unprecedented times?
You are so right. There's multitudes of research that's been done on brain waves that show that gratitude actually alters our brains, our ways of thinking. It makes it, and it has far-reaching consequences to make us feel more positive more widely in our lives. And it can be very simple things. And when I work with clients, I always encourage them to think about little things. If you've got hot water in the morning, a cup of tea, and be able to really enjoy that first cup of coffee without rushing off to do other things. If you're able to wrap up warm when you're out walking, and today, I don't know what the weather's like for you, but here in Bristol, it's really bright blue skies, crisp and cold, and it's just lovely. It's lovely to be able to be out. And that level of gratitude is as much as we need. We don't need huge things to be grateful for. It's the gratitude for the everyday that will make a really big difference.
Yeah, I am definitely trying to do that more, especially since the pandemic was declared. Simple things like you mentioned the hot water. I'm always saying that to myself. Obviously, we live in Ireland. You're over in the UK. It is cold this time of year. And when it's absolutely freezing outside and you come in for a warm or a hot shower, it is just, there's no other feeling like it. So simple things like that, as you're saying, Neelu, like your bed, getting into like a really cozy bed at night. How grateful and how lucky we should be and should feel that we're able to do those things. Listen, it was absolutely lovely speaking to you, Dr. Neelu Ahmed, lecturer in social sciences at the Bristol Dental School at the University of Bristol. Thank you very much. And I think I can say Merry Christmas. Will I get away with that?
I think so. It's December. I think we're allowed.
Okay. Hopefully people won't be too mad at me. Thank you so much and take care of yourself, Dr. Neelu Ahmed, as I said, over in the University of Bristol, speaking about why celebrating Christmas is good for our mental health. So there you go. You should definitely be doing it. And of course, you should also be listening to KFM because we have started playing Christmas music from today. There are lots and lots of songs coming up in the next few hours. I know Paul Power has loads packed in between 4 and 7 with K-Drive. But of course, next is Benjamin Atkinson with K-Drive Gold. And I want to thank Caoimhe Harney and Owen Beattie for their help this afternoon. And of course, to you for listening. Take care, and I will speak to you again tomorrow morning.
Kildare Focus with Kira Noble.